This is The Difference, a podcast for nonprofit fundraising in a for-profit world, presented by Convergent Nonprofit Solutions, a leader in nonprofit fundraising. Convergent's professionals can help your nonprofit secure sustainable funding now and for the future.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Difference. I'm Kristen Harper, Director of Marketing at Convergent. Today, we're bringing you an inside perspective on economic development. Joining me is Rick Kiernan, a Convergent principal with more than 20 years of experience in fundraising and community development, and also Crystal Morfis, the founder and CEO of Creative Economic Development Consulting. Hi, guys. Thanks for joining us. Let's start by maybe telling everyone how long you guys have known each other and worked together. Rick, did you want to start us off?
Sure. Thank you, Kristen. I think it has been something like 10 to 12 years that I have known Crystal, and was trying to remember if it was Greenwood, South Carolina. Crystal had done a strategic plan for the Greenwood Partnership Alliance. We went in and did a feasibility study and capital campaign afterwards. If it was that project, there was one right after that, I think, in Wayne County, Goldsboro, North Carolina, where we worked together. We actually tag-teamed that project, and Crystal had done similarly a strategic plan, a draft, and we took it out to the community and tested it. And I think that was about 2009, if I'm not mistaken. So how quickly time flies.
It absolutely does fly. And you're right, Rick. It's been more than 10 years that we've had the opportunity to work in collaboration. And I've enjoyed watching the good things that your firm has done for our clients over the years. You mentioned Greenwood and Wayne County. There are some other counties and communities where we have developed a strategic plan, and then you have followed right along to raise the funds for that community. And it's been good to see that they've had the resources to implement some of the great ideas out of the strategic planning process.
Good partnership, that's for sure. And I can't believe Creative is over 7 years old now.
Yeah, talk about time flying. Yeah, it's amazing. We turned 7 this summer. So this year we will turn 8 years old. And it's been an amazing journey.
Yeah, congratulations. That's great to hear.
Well, starting things off, you guys, with an inside perspective on economic development, of course, I thought we'd just tackle this right away and start with the obvious and talk workforce. Clearly not a new topic in economic development by any means, but recently it seems like the conversation is broadening to include quality of place, housing, other supports to talent development and attraction. Is that what you're seeing, Rick?
Well, it sure is. And I tell you what, I'll take you back a little bit in time. I started my fundraising career back in 1996, and I've worked predominantly with economic development groups around the country. And over the first, 15, 18 years of that time frame, these organizations focused on new business attraction and business retention and expansion. And I think it was probably, 2012, 2013, we started getting pushback from major employers when we were out raising money for job creation because they had all these job openings. And we started bringing that to the attention of our economic development clients. And what was interesting initially, a lot of them pushed back. They said, you know, job fulfillment's not our job. Job creation is our job. Job fulfillment, that's the community college, that's the school system, the workforce investment board. The more progressive economic development groups around the country really started taking it on. And of course, these days, last 5 years, workforce is a major component, if not the major component, in every one of our economic development capital campaigns. Well, the last few years, it's gone forward even more so. It's not workforce development only, it's workforce attraction and retention. You know, you look at some of the statistics out there, 3.5% unemployment, 7.3 million job openings around the country, 77 million baby boomers in the process of retiring. So this is going to be the primary factor that site selectors are going to use in terms of making decisions where companies are going for the next 10 plus years. So it's not just making sure the workforce in your area has the skill sets they need, but that you have enough workers. And from that perspective, it's all about quality of place. What's going to attract workers to your community? What's going to help them stay there? What are the amenities? Housing? Those are some of the interesting things that we have seen around the country right now. And you go back to Greenwood, one of the clients that Crystal and I both work with, the Partnership Alliance, they saw this as such an issue that 5 years ago, they created the Greenwood Promise. And these promise programs are really taking off around the country, and they serve really two purposes. One is to make sure that the workers in that area do have the skill sets that they need. because they're guaranteed tuition, usually at a community college, and that's what it is in Greenwood, Piedmont Tech. Every single student who graduates Greenwood County High School, public, private, homeschool, gets a free ride, tuition and fees covered at Piedmont Tech. So you're increasing the number of workers in the area that have the skills employers need. But here's the great piece. It's a workforce attraction element. You talk to realtors 5 years after the Greenwood Promise was started, and they'll tell you they're selling more houses. And people are coming into Greenwood from a lot of outlying communities as well as around South Carolina because they know that their kids have got an education through an associate's degree. And what's great, we're getting ready to start their next feasibility study, a capital campaign. They'll raise another five. We raised five the first time. This will take it up to about 10. And after these kids get their two-year associate's degree, they have the opportunity to go to Lander for a four-year degree, which is pretty exciting there. So talk about a workforce, not only attraction, but retention tool that these kids and these families are going to be in Greenwood for a real long time.
You know, I've been in economic development for quite a long time, and the unemployment rate has gone up and it's gone down, and economic development organizations have become more interested in workforce development and less interested over time. I think what is different today is that we will be in a low unemployment situation for quite a long time. Just if you look at current demographics and projected demographics going forward, this low unemployment rate isn't going to be just a few years issue. It's going to be a very long-term issue. So I think that's why we see many economic development organizations, even more so in the past, diverting a great number of their resources to workforce and talent attraction, retention, and development. And a lot of my clients are very concerned about staying in their lane, about their core area of a program of work. And even if they do not have a robust talent attraction, retention, and development program, they're making sure that they have key partners who do have that. And they're plugging in the ways that they can to that. Understanding, again, it's going to be a long-term issue, just not something that's a cyclical thing that we've experienced in the past.
I agree with that. When you look at those baby boomers in the process of retiring, and they're not even halfway through yet, this problem is going to get worse before it gets better. So in addition to quality of place, we're seeing housing really become an issue. Work development, a client of ours over in Morganton, has taken on a housing study to really focus on making sure that they have the housing needs for workers to come on in there, because you can focus on getting the jobs and now you have job openings and you attract workers. But if there's no place for them to work or no place for them to live and purchase a house, that becomes a problem. And that's a barrier for them to come to your community. So that's becoming an issue. And what's interesting, I'd say probably 2/3 of Convergence clients are economic development in nature, chambers of commerce, economic development groups around the country. The other third are more philanthropic organizations like YMCAs. And I bring that up because we're working with four YMCAs in the Carolinas right now. And certainly in every one of those capital campaigns is a philanthropic component, but a big piece of this is economic development. It is a workforce attraction tool. It's a community asset. And if you go to an Anderson, South Carolina, for example, this really impressive YMCA, that's one of the stops. When the economic development director in Anderson has a prospect in town and is driving that crew around town, the YMCA is a stop, and they bring that person in, that crew in, the prospect team, and showcase this really great YMCA. That is an attraction tool and enables them to attract not only their executives, but workforce to Anderson, because it's such a valuable family-based organization. So we're starting to see some of those really play a role in economic development that historically, you know, the first YMCA campaign I ran was back in Spokane, Washington, 20 years ago. We didn't talk about economic development. It's the heartstrings tied to the purse strings. And that was the mentality. We are positioning YMCAs as economic development community assets, and it is resonating with the business community, and they're stepping up and funding these to make it easier for them to attract workers to town.
We're seeing similar expansions in terms of economic development organizations and their strategic plan, where in the past, their strategic plan was much focused in the core areas of product development and marketing and business attraction, for example. We're seeing expansions to make sure that they have partners on board for key amenities, quality of life amenities, recreation, like you talked about, a sense of place and community building, Also, you mentioned housing is another key component, educational infrastructure, healthcare infrastructure, all of those things that are important to attracting people to your community. Because as we again go through this tight labor market for quite some time, the communities that are going to be successful are those that can prove to companies that they have that talent pipeline, both coming out of their schools, but also people moving into and staying in their community. And all of those quality of life things that we've talked about in the past are very important and integral now to economic development. So we see those attachments being made in the long-range plans of economic development organizations.
Sure. And Rick, you mentioned the 77 million baby boomers. That obviously has played into everything you all have talked about. I did see that on your blog late last year, Crystal, that you were talking about the impact of the silver tsunami. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how you see that playing out this year?
Sure, Kristen. When people think about the silver tsunami, they immediately think about the impact on the workforce, which is what we've been talking about, these 10,000 baby boomers that are retiring every day, and we just don't have enough people coming into the workforce to satisfy employer needs. But there are other really important effects of the silver tsunami that economic developers should be thinking about. One is business ownership. There are about 12 million businesses owned by baby boomers in the country, and it's estimated that about 40% of those do not have a succession plan. So if you're an economic developer in a city or a county or a region, you should be looking around at your businesses and identifying those owners that are close to retirement, and you should be talking to them about succession plans. Because if there's not a succession plan, they're a candidate to close or to be acquired by another company, which could create a lot of disruption in your local economy, especially if you're in a small community. If you have several businesses that close just due to owner retirement, it could be a long time before you replace those. So there's going to be a lot of changeover in this ownership structure as the baby boomers launch into retirement and decide they don't want to work anymore. Another and probably the most important effect of the silver tsunami are the changes in leadership that we're seeing in communities. I have said for a long time that the only difference between successful and unsuccessful communities in economic development is leadership, because I have seen communities that have wonderful assets in place, but they're not making any progress because their leadership is at loggerheads. And then I've seen communities that have very few assets that are doing amazing things because their leadership is all working together. And with the silver tsunami, we're seeing more and more baby boomers phase out of those volunteer, civic, nonprofit leadership roles in the community, and it's leaving vacant spaces. There's just not enough Gen Xers to fill those spaces. Millennials like to participate in those leadership roles in different ways than Gen Xers and baby boomers. So communities need to be thinking about how do we plug in younger people into leadership roles. And so we have seen a renewed interest in leadership development programs. They were around a lot in the 90s, and some of them just sort of phased out, but we see them coming back in addition to government-sponsored like citizen academies and other structured leadership development programs that are engaging young people and encouraging them to get involved. Because again, as baby boomers phase out, they're going to phase out of the workforce, they're going to phase out of their businesses, they're going to phase out of leading Habitat for Humanity or the library board or your economic development board. And we need to be thinking about all these changes that are going to happen.
You know, that's interesting, Crystal. I did not know those statistics, and it's fascinating. But what you said towards the end there, these baby boomer seniors that are out there serving on all these different boards, that is one of the biggest challenges right now that we're facing in our capital campaigns. It doesn't matter if they're economic development or philanthropic in nature. We're going back to the same folks and we're asking them to chair this campaign. And they're saying, hey, I chaired the last chamber campaign. I've chaired the YMCA campaign, chaired the Boys and Girls Club campaign, the community college campaign. Where's this next generation of leaders coming from? When are they going to step up? I don't know when they're going to step up. We're hoping sooner than later. And certainly we're seeing a lot of leadership programs, right, across the country in communities, large and small, trying to groom folks to help them better understand what's involved in helping your community grow and thrive. But that's a part of the silver tsunami I think I overlooked. I think I inherently knew it was there. But until you just described it, I thought to myself, my gosh, we're facing that in every one of our campaigns.
Yeah, that was great. Great point.
As you think about going forward, and you mentioned some of the key challenges of communities, and we think about that leadership piece and how important it is. That's another reason that we see a lot of focus on young professional networks in communities. We see chambers and economic development organizations placing renewed interest, placing resources in young professional networks. It is about workforce, a talent, attraction, development, but it's also leadership is the reason they're doing it.
Yeah, and definitely combination, certainly. We've got a great client in Burlington, Iowa. I'll be there in a couple of weeks for another project with a theater there, but the Economic Development Group has put together this Young Professionals Network, and they've put so much emphasis on revitalizing their downtown. When I worked with them three campaigns ago, back in 2008, 2009, you could fire a cannon downtown on a Thursday at 7 o'clock and you'd bother nobody. And now you can go downtown Tuesday at 9 o'clock and you can't find parking. There are restaurants and there are bars and this upper story housing. And so they just need to get people there. And with this young professionals group, what they've done is once people are there, they get in this social network and they very quickly make sure that they're reaching out to them, bringing them out to events, building that friend group as quickly as they can. So they begin to develop some roots in the community, which makes it a little bit more sticky. So they're less likely to pick up and move and go back to Des Moines or Chicago or wherever they came from, because Burlington, Southeast Iowa, you know, about 40,000 people, not that big, but it's this great thriving community right there on the Mississippi. And they've done a great job of really trying to attract and retain young people.
So if you want just a fun piece of information, we did some work on the Young Professionals Network in Blacksburg, Virginia. It was actually one of our give back projects. And we surveyed employers and businesses in the area to ask them what they thought young people wanted from a young professionals network. And they said that young people wanted professional development. They wanted information exchange. They wanted to meet and network with leaders and learn from them. And we also surveyed young people and asked them what they wanted from a young professionals network. And they said, beer.
Yeah. That was not what I expected you to say.
they really wanted social interactions, oftentimes around beer or wine at a fun place, so that they could network and get to know each other and be socially engaged and connected with other young professionals. So if you are listening to this and you're thinking about revamping your young professionals network, I encourage you to survey the young people, because what they want oftentimes is not what employers think they want.
Yeah.
Great advice.
Too funny.
So are there other important topics on the minds of economic developers today that you want to bring up here? I know you've had some interesting things. I brought up the silver tsunami from your blog, Crystal, but you've had some interesting topics lately on economic impact analysis and using data. I don't know if you want to talk on that a little bit, Crystal, but what else are you guys seeing out there?
Sure. Communities are much more concerned with data, like every company in the U.S., and tracking more information. Communities want to be able to show the return on investment in economic development. So we see more of them going through the process of an economic impact analysis for all types of projects in the community. We used to think of using this type of analysis for industrial development projects, but we've used them on breweries. We've used them on hotel developments, on special event centers, just a wide range of community projects, because particularly elected officials that are putting public money into development projects want to be able to talk about the benefit, both the direct and indirect benefits of that project. So we see economic developers getting more sophisticated in their analysis and how they're sharing that analysis and information with communities. One other thing that economic developers are talking a lot about today is just the economy. The so-called recession that has been looming for a few years and keeps getting pushed back. But I know from my 20 plus years in economic development that national election years are typically a slower decision year. One of my colleagues coined the term the emerging geo-muddle that continues to shift international things that are ongoing. There's just a lot of uncertainty throughout this year. So economic developers are paying really close attention to the economy, which means they're shifting some of their program of work maybe to business retention and expansion as they think about how the economy may be slowing a little bit this year. And for some economists, they say not, so maybe next year. But I just know that there's a lot of economists and economic developers that are talking about the economy this year.
We are certainly seeing that in a lot of our campaigns. And actually, I think it's more in the feasibility studies in terms of trying to gauge what companies might be willing to invest over a five-year period of time, because they keep talking about this economic correction 12, 18, 24 months out. Nobody knows exactly when it's going to happen, and we're probably talking ourselves into it. But we're seeing some of that as an issue. And then the last thing, and Chris, I'd be interested in your thoughts here, product or lack thereof. We've really started to see this pop up over the last couple of years in our campaigns. I think you were at the summer conference of the North Carolina Economic Development Association in Beaufort last year. And a gentleman from the Economic Development Partnership in North Carolina gave an overview. And I thought it was pretty interesting. He said, even when we make it through all the workforce hoops, and that's the number one issue, we all know it is, but even when we make it all the way through all those hoops, the number one reason we are knocked out, that we're eliminated, lack of product. And if you think about spec buildings or certified sites or just available land, at least from what we are seeing, all things being equal, a company that's looking at relocating and they've narrowed it down to a couple, three communities, and one's got a spec building they can get right into and the other they're going to have to build. You know, from their perspective, as soon as they choose your community, they're losing money until they start shipping product out the back door, right? So it's all about speed to market. And we have seen that really come up and be a piece of our economic development campaigns. Not all of them, but we're starting to see it more and more lately.
You're absolutely right. We've done research over several years in multiple states, and the figures that we cite as averages is about 65% of all prospective companies want a building. That is their number one preference, is a building. About 17% either they prefer a building. So when you take the 65% that definitely want a building and the 17% that prefer a building, that's 82%. A lot of communities talk about site development, and of course, site development is the need before you have building development, but they get focused on site development. But really, that's a very small piece of the pie, which means it's highly competitive in the site area. The buildings is really preferred to site development. We saw more spec building before the Great Recession than, of course, we didn't. But there was an inventory that became available because of the recession. So for many years, we were just taking down that inventory. Slowly, we saw spec building from the private sector come back to those primary markets. I don't think that we have seen spec building come back to those secondary markets, definitely not the rural markets like it was before the Great Recession. So there is this product gap. We did an analysis, a three-state analysis. You can find the blog on our website that talks about the building and site inventory of Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina, which is our primary market that where we consult. So you can find that information that compares. But you're right, Rick. Workforce, we say, seals the deal, but every company has to have a home. And so having a qualified site, but definitely a building, quality building. And quality building is the key. When I meet with town councils or county councils, they say, oh, we've got a huge inventory of buildings. But when you start digging down to ceiling height and age and access and a lot of other things, you'll find that oftentimes their building stock really is not of quality.
Before we close, Crystal, your company is doing something pretty fantastic right now. Could you tell us about the Give Back contest? You mentioned it a little bit ago, but maybe give us some details, what it is, how to enter, and a little bit about the past winners.
Sure. We started in 2014, so this is our seventh year of the Creative Give Back. It is an award of up to $25,000 of our consulting services to just a really fun project. Economic development organizations and local governments in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia are eligible to apply. The only criteria is that it's a really fun project, that it can be meaningful to other communities. We like to say if we're not getting paid, we should be having fun. The types of projects that we have awarded in the past have been some related to workforce and talent, like in Wayne County, North Carolina. We looked at why companies in the area were not eager to hire military spouses and dependents. It's, they have an Air Force base there, and there are a lot of trailing spouses that really would like to be employed, but there's some barrier there. I mentioned Blacksburg. We looked at their Young Professionals Network and how it could be re-energized. And we just finished up late last year a project in Waynesboro, Virginia, where we looked at a corridor that connected their downtown to the Shenandoah National Park and the Appalachia Trail and the Blue Ridge Parkway, and how that corridor could be revitalized. There's a lot of information on our website. I'll tell you, we don't pick the winner. We set up an independent panel to pick the winner. There's still time to apply. The applications are not due until the middle of February. And then we announce the winner in March. And it's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think Rick's been a judge, he mentioned too. He said it was great too. So
I was. I was one of three judges on the inaugural competition.
Oh, that's great.
I sure was. And I tell you, really some great submissions. And it was pretty difficult to pick one because I think there were three at the time, and they all three look really interesting and fun. So I can't remember who won, Crystal, but I trust it was a good one and a fun one.
All right. Well, thank you again to both of you for joining us. And thank you to our listeners. To find out more about Convergent and our services, visit convergentnonprofit.com. And to find out about and enter Crystal's Give Back contest, visit creativeedc.com. Thank you.